Come on back, peaceful.
Whoa. Easy now.
I'm gonna be free or die.
I've been walking with my face turned to the sun. Weight on my shoulders, a bullet in my gun. Oh, I got eyes in the back of my head, just in case I have to run. I do what I can when I can, while I can for my people. While the clouds roll back and the stars fill the night, that's when I'm gonna stand up, take my people with me. Together we are going to a brand new home, far across the river. Can you hear freedom calling, calling me to answer? Gonna keep on keeping on, I can feel it.
Have made it 100 miles to freedom. Would you like to pick a new name to mark your freedom?
Paratum.
Early in the morning, before the sun begins to shine, we're gonna start moving towards that separating. To salvation, and I'll fight with the strength that I got until I die. So I'm gonna stand up, take my people with me. Together we are going to a brand new home, far across the river. Can you hear freedom?
Harriet, welcome to the Underground Railroad.
And I know what's around the bend might be hard to face, cause I'm alone and I just might fail. But Lord knows I'll try.
Good evening, my friends, family, and community at large.
Good evening, my friends.
The show where we engage in the very necessary conversation on race and ethnicity. I'm your host, Kimberly Y. Irwin, and you're listening to us on WGXC.
Kimberly Y. Irwin, and you're listening to us on WGXC
7FM, awayfarm.org enterprise. Every third Tuesday from 7 to 8, we come together to tackle the questions many still ask. Why talk about race? And my answer remains the same. To combat racism, because education is key and discussion is a must. So let's get talking, because stay woke, no topic is to be taboo. This month is Black History Month, a time when we honor the legacies, voices, and contributions of Black pioneers. Tonight, we celebrate the incredible Harriet Tubman, posthumously recognized as a Brigadier General in 2024 for her fearless leadership as the Moses of the Underground Railroad. And we'll highlight the trailblazing Kendrick Lamar, a Pulitzer Prize-winning artist whose music is both a revolution and a reflection of our times, and especially because he was just in the Super Bowl during halftime. So we'll highlight a little bit of what's happened there. And speaking of visionaries, we are honored to welcome our guest today, Kenny Perry, who is a media strategist and founder of Organic Mindset Agency. Just that name, title of that company alone brings to mind for me a trailblazing type of organization. So we're going to hear how his experience has been shaped in both the United States and Canada, and that his work is in the digital spaces provides ample opportunities for businesses to thrive. So I can't wait to speak to you, Kenny, who is here, by the way. We don't have to wait for him to dive in. But first, I'm going to set the stage for what's we're going to talk about. Again, we have Did You Know, DYK, and some firsts. And our talk term is End Racism, because of the National Football League's Super Bowl recension of the title on the football playing field. We will also think about some quotes that we have heard and how some are actually possibly not as recognizable as, or shouldn't be as recognizable as they are, because they don't come from the people that we think they should come from. And of course, we're going to do a roundtable, but I must say this is a taped show. We don't usually tape them, but we taped it this month to make sure that we brought it to you. And so there won't be any call-ins, but we'll still have the roundtable. I think the roundtable for two. I think Kenny and I would be able to have a really good conversation, since for once, I really didn't talk to this particular guest talker in advance. So let me share with you a little. Oh, so let me just say that you were listening to Cynthia Erivo at the start of this episode. Cynthia Erivo, of course, is a dynamic vocal artist and now movie star, right? She's in many different movies and a recent one for children even. And this particular song came from Stand Up, which was the song that set in motion or set us to remember Harriet Tubman. Harriet Tubman, of course, is, like I mentioned, a trailblazer, because she was able to use the railroad to not advantage only her, or the Underground Railroad to not only advantage herself, but to advantage over 70 individuals who were in slavery. And it's interesting that she is one of our first, because she's the first person to have received, or the first person to have worked in the South during, timer. So we time our segment. So I'm going to hurry up and say this one thing, and I might come back to her because, like I said, there is a quote. But she was the first to give information to the generals during the Civil War. And that's really interesting because, again, she wasn't even just the first woman to do it. She was the first person to do it. So I just wanted to definitely make us understand that first on her. So that was my, since I don't have my loyal producer, Garrett Roche of the Roche Solid Truth, who I wanted to mention, he totally missed this episode, but he'll be back in March. And of course, he will help us with the call-ins when he comes back next month. But so I'm going to use my little segment timer. So that was the bell that lets us know that we should get into the next segment. And that next one is with, like I said, my incredible guest. So I'm going to get to his bio because I don't want to mess this up by trying to go into my head about it. All right. Let's say Kenny Perry here is going to share a little bit more about himself, but let me introduce him like this. Our guest talker, Kenny Perry, is a proud Black descendant and the visionary founder of Organic Mindset Agency, a digital marketing force headquartered in Wilmington, Delaware, and Toronto, Canada. Originally from Halifax, Nova Scotia, Kenny's journey spans borders, cultures, and ethnic narratives. With a degree in media and communications from the University of Winnipeg, he brings a global lens to how media shapes identity and representation. And before I ask him to state his reason for being on the show and more information about himself, before we get into, like I said, the roundtable that comes after, I want to just mention why I thought Kenny would be so excellent for the show. We are getting an international number of viewers who share their perspectives and thoughts on our show and what's happening in the U.S. around topics of race and ethnicity. And so to have someone who's coming from another country, although some like to say it's the 51st state, it's not. It's actually its own nation and a proud nation at that. And I'd have to say, because I brought up Harriet Tubman, it's a nation that was, thankfully for those slavery, the slaves of the time, because that was a place where they could seek to go to be free. When they could no longer go just north, they had to go further north, and that's into Canada. And actually, Harriet Tubman brought them into Canada. Now, I won't say that Kenny's going to talk about that part of Canada, but because making a note of how, you know, Canada is involved in the conversation currently in America and how it was very helpful to Black Americans coming out of slavery in the past. And of course, people from all over the planet also love Canada, but this is not a Canada conversation. It's a Kenny Perry conversation. Kenny, come on board. Thank you so much for being here. And take as long as you want to share who you are, your perspectives for being on the show. And again, we'll talk more later too.
Absolutely. You know, I want to thank you both for, you know, having me on the show and everything like that. You know, it's an honor to be here. And, you know, I can even dive deep in a little bit about my story, and I'll also dive into even some of the history as well when it comes to, you know, coming from Nova Scotia. So, you know, I'm from Halifax, Nova Scotia, Canada. It's on the east coast of Canada, geographic-wise. If you tell to the American listeners and the worldwide listeners, it's just right above Maine. So if you're going to go far east, you're going to go. So where Maine is somewhat connected to New Brunswick, and the province next to New Brunswick is a peninsula called Nova Scotia. Now, It's Nova Scotia stays deep to my heart because it is really where the Underground Railroad ended, you know, and we're going back, you know, obviously hundreds and hundreds of years. So, you know, a lot of people don't realize as well that a lot of Black loyalists that also fought, whether it was during the American Revolution or if you're referring to the War of 1812, where, you know, Black loyalists that fought alongside the British to try to stop the Americans from the takeover, granted land to Nova Scotians, Black loyalists in Nova Scotia. So, you know, Africville was founded, North Preston was founded, East Preston, certain communities that are, you know, Black communities in Nova Scotia were founded along those times. Now, what makes it really unique is Canada is the most multicultural country in the world, and we have people from all nations that come here and everything like that. The majority of Blacks in Canada are most of the time from the Caribbean, or, you know, you have some that come like straight from Africa, the African refugees and whatnot. I mean, we're all our descendants of Africa, but I'm saying that like come directly from the continent. So having said that, Nova Scotia is very different in the sense where, you know, it goes really hand in hand with Afro-American culture, because in Nova Scotia, you have a lot of, you know, Afro-American cultures, whether it's the food, whether it's the music, it's like when a lot of Americans come there, it goes hand in hand, Americans feel at home. So I am half American. My father's from New Jersey. He's from East Orange, New Jersey. So that's where he grew up at and born and raised. He ended up coming to Canada because at that time, a lot of Americans were coming to Canada to play basketball. And he came actually up. He was recruited by an American from New York City. He got a coaching job at a small university called St. Mary's University in Halifax, Nova Scotia. He came there, played basketball there, established roots there, met my mother. And then they, you know, bounced back a little between the U.S., between Baltimore, New Jersey, and Halifax. So, you know, settled in Halifax, you know, had me and everything like that. And then when I was growing up, I was playing basketball. So I spent some years living in Atlanta, spent some years living in San Francisco, spent quite a bit of time in New Jersey with my grandmother there. And I got a chance to really see, you know, the lens through, you know, obviously living as being Black and living in Canada as opposed to the United States as well. So I've had the ability to be able to, you know, experience both sides of the coin. Now, you know, diving in even a little bit more to introduce myself as well, you know, my journey is, you know, I, you know, grew up playing basketball pretty competitively, ended up playing in the United States for a bit. I played, you know, high school in Atlanta. I also went on to play in San Francisco for a bit. And then I ended up coming back to Canada to finish my degree and, you know, actually get into my professional road. So that's a little bit about my story. And, you know, I really was always passionate about media, communications, design, things along those lines. And then I just, you know, decided to work on creating my own company. It was like during the pandemic, you know, I was fortunate to have a job at the time. And I was able to really, really figure out what I really wanted to do. And then I just had an aha moment where I was like, I wanted to create something that, one, scalable, two, I could operate in an online space, and three, it's, you know, something that, you know, God forbid it goes to another pandemic, it's pandemic proof because I operate in a digital space. So that's when the birth of Organic Mindset Agency came aboard.
Oh, okay. Wow. First, I have to say, you talk very quickly. You talk quickly.
Oh, sorry about that.
The show is we're going to get so much in because you talk so quickly. But you mentioned, you didn't mention the title because I thought, like I said, the title of the company was very interesting to me. So can you share more about how that came to be?
Absolutely. I love this question. It's one of my favorite questions, Kim. You know, when it comes to, you know, people asking about the question, the thought that goes into it. So as you can see, you know, the hat I'm wearing and obviously my logo in the background, my logo is a tree transforming into a brain. So I'm a health junkie. I'm really into fitness. I'm really into living that, you know, healthy, organic lifestyle. So, you know, I think about terms that are used on a TED Talk type basis. When you hear the term organic, for instance, it's something that people say organic growth, organic connections, organic, you know, pretty much business, whatever it may be. It's a term that's a very TED Talk worthy term. And for myself, you know, the health and wellness aspect of it, organic was just something that stayed in my mind. And then when I was trying to think of a title, then I thought about mindset. Mindset is something that, you know, when I wake up in the morning and I go to the gym and I'm setting like my bench press max, or when I'm setting my sales goals for the week, for the month, whatever it may be, there's a certain mindset that you have to have in order to achieve your goals. So I was like, it just flowed together. So I was like, Organic Mindset Agency. So that's what was my thought process. Again, another very TED Talk worthy term, where you hear a lot of people from a business aspect, you know, whether you're talking about a Grant Cardone, whether you're talking about, you know, Swinney Robbins, you know, whether you're talking about, you know, pretty much anyone in that realm, even someone like Ryan Leslie, for example, who's, you know, a musician turned entrepreneur that's really, you know, pushing the agenda of, you know, obviously, you know, Black ownership, entrepreneurship, things along those lines. You hear the term mindset a lot. So when I think about it, and putting it all together, it just flowed. And like my logo is a tree transforming into a brain, because I just thought Organic Mindset Agency has had a nice ring, a nice flow to it. That's what really just, you know, made my business really stand out, especially when I connect with people, I hand a business card or whether it's online, they see the name. And a lot of time people can be a little bit confused whether or not I'm a mindset coach or I work in the health and wellness space. But, you know, it's just, it's a very engaging name that causes, you know, me to have connections for conversations.
Yeah, and I think that's really what makes it transformative in getting clients, because people don't know it, but they really like stories.
And 100%.
That brings about a story that you can share, that story, and people then get to know more about who you are. You mentioned Black entrepreneurship. Do you think there's any difference in how you might go about preparing for your clients or preparing for your or preparing for clients who are different ethnicities or have come from different countries or, you know, nationalities because of, you know, what their thoughts and interests would be utilizing the media for their particular brand? Or is it just, you know, like in this case, storytelling is, people love storytelling no matter where they come from, although many may not think so. They don't really get that storytelling is probably really where the sale comes from as opposed to the product. People tend to buy products if they like where it's coming from, that kind of thing. Or so did you get the question really?
Yeah, I get what you're trying to say and where you're going with it. Yeah, so,
their motivation for people based on their ethnicity or their nationality, how you work with them.
Yeah, so, you know, a lot of people will look at it in the sense of, you know, oh, I have to connect somebody who's of my own ethnicity or connect with somebody that, you know, looks like them. But, like, once I get into a sales conversation with somebody, that just goes out the window. I mean, obviously, when you connect with somebody who looks like us, it's easier in the sense where, you know, your guard goes down a little bit. But, like, when I get in there into a sales call and I'm actually, you know, discussing the value that, you know, even getting a custom AI-powered website created by, you know, my agency, I know that the value that I can provide is more than enough to, at least if you're not going to become a client, you're going to be thinking about how can I become a client, or you're going to strongly consider what it is that we're offering. So I believe it comes a lot with the value and how you connect. Because when it comes to conversation, it's just a sales conversation is basically a conversation like we're having right now, right? But it's finding that problem, being a problem solver, being able to find a connection with that person. Because at the end of the day, when a person is not buying your product, they have to buy you first. So when you sell yourself as a person, that's what's going to pretty much dictate whether or not they're going to actually become a client or not. So, like, even the slogans from a branding aspect, you know, with Organic Mindset Agency, it's our slogan is growing your business is all in your mind. So it's already in you. So the logo is a tree transforming into a brand. You water a plant, you water a tree, it's going to grow. So the business side, the concept behind that is the business idea is already within you. You just have to maybe have somebody put a little bit of water on it. And that's what we do. And it grows within your brain. And then boom, all of a sudden, you know, you have an ideology as to what it is you're looking to do and whatnot.
Okay. So it really doesn't require people to check a box, whether with nation they come from or with ethnicity.
Yeah, I don't look at it like that. Yeah.
Okay. Well, some people do look at culture, well, color when they look at culture. Certainly, this is a segment change, so I'm using that as a segue. And maybe you could help, and maybe you can shed a light. Is there any type of historical or cultural knowledge in Canada the way it is here in the U.S., like with the different months of recognitions? Like February is Black History Month, and so that I'm going to shed a little light on certain historical people who have legacies and advancements in the U.S. Because of their being Black Americans. Do you have anything like that in Canada where different people of different cultures are recognized in certain months? Although they do say, you know, we should recognize people 365 days of the week, of the month, of the year, so that is 365 days of the year. But we do have these months of recognition in the U.S. now.
Yeah, absolutely. We've had Black History Month in Canada for as long as I can remember, even probably before I was even born. So just like hand to hand with the United States, it's just a border that separates us. So therefore, it goes hand in hand, right? So, you know, Black History Month is very prominent in Canada, and it's something that, you know, obviously in the school system and obviously community centers and whatnot, the recognition of Black History Month is prominent here.
Okay. Well, thanks for sharing that. I'm
no problem.
Going to talk about racism having ended. In fact, that's what the New Yorker said, if you're paying attention to the New Yorker, because of what the Super Bowl licks, they like to say, 59 said, like I said, they ended, they took off ending in racism to choose love. And I saw on the, I saw and heard on a podcast platform where one former football star stated, I won't say the name, but a former star, very much older, and I think he was in his 70s, said he really likes Choose Love, but he loves End Racism. And when you look at what that meant for him was choose love is good. Everyone should choose love. But end racism is something you can actually do to showcase love in a sense, right? And so for the Super Bowl to have that and then have an all-star Kendrick Lamar halftime show, which got lots of feedback for many different reasons. He's really a cultural icon, having won many Grammys and recently and earlier in the decade. And he received a Pulitzer Prize for his record or his album, Damn, D-A-M-N. And actually there is a quote I want to share with people, but while I find that quote, do you watch, I mean, I know there's not a huge football league with, I don't know, do you call football American football there in Canada like they do in Europe or?
Just football. Same thing. Again, it's a lot of the cultural things are very hand in hand. It's just a border separating us, so it's literally the same.
But I am in New York. We're closer to Montreal. Like we're only 2 hours or so from Montreal, so we get a lot of the French Canadian stuff. So that's very much still European connected. So
yeah,
I guess from Halifax, that's really you know, you don't sound like you're in Canada, for example, right? People don't say something.
I hear you on that. Yeah.
So okay. Yeah. So do you know of any of the Super Bowl changes and what terminology might be discussed maybe in this realm within racism? Are we in a post-racial world here? What is your perspective?
Well, to me, racism is always going to exist. It's something that, you know, it's not, you're not born racist. It's something that's taught. And unfortunately, I believe that, you know, racism is something that's going to continue till the end of time. It's just, you know, people are like the whole end racism thing. I'm not 100% buying that in that sense, because I know that, you know, whether it's, you know, overt racism, whether it's, you know, hidden racism, it's going to be there. You know what I'm saying? And it is something that unfortunately is just not going to stop. And it could be even something as subtle as, you know, if I'm at an HR company, if I'm in the HR department scanning through resumes and I see a name that doesn't necessarily align with the quote unquote normal name that you may see, you know what I'm saying? Then that can right away be, you know, very much a cause for, you know, being screened or put to the side for qualifications. Because, you know, there's a lot of people that talk about from a DEI perspective that, you know, okay, you know what, just hide the names and just show qualifications. And then that gives less as to who's going to get the actual interview and actually get the job position. So these are things that are really, really prominent that get overlooked a lot when it comes to the corporate world or whatnot, because there is a lot of, you know, nepotism, racism, things along those lines that do happen. They're not really brought out to the forefront, but there are, you know, it's almost like, especially within, you know, whether it's corporate America, corporate Canada, especially for, you know, Blacks, a lot of the time there's situations where, you know, we have to go above and beyond to really prove ourselves to, you know, make sure that we, you know, pretty much hold up the bargain when it comes to, you know, qualifications or what it may be in terms of getting, you know, a certain position or whatnot. So yeah, it is. I don't believe racism is ever going to end. And in response to Kendrick's performance, I thought it was absolutely brilliant, because I mean, when it comes to Kendrick, I've been a Kendrick fan since Overly Dedicated. So when he dropped that probably was like 2011 time. So I'm going way back, you know, Section 80, you know, Good Kid, Mad City, I think is still one of the greatest albums ever made. And then even, you know, To Pimp a Butterfly, in my opinion, is one of the greatest albums ever, just off of a symbolic point of view. You know, like Black and the Berry, that track has a lot of very strong, you know, messages in that song. And that's when Kendrick really, I would say he really found his identity in terms of, you know, really showing a lot of Black empowerment on that album. And I feel that he really took it from there. And it was almost like that's where the Tupac comparisons really started to come from, because when he really started to take his stance on, you know, different things that are happening, this album came out, I believe, 2015, if I'm not mistaken. And where he took his stance on that album really, really, really gave him, I would say, more of a almost like a superhero type view when it comes to being an artist that has a very strong message in his tracks.
Yeah, and I like how during the halftime he incorporated many different other African Americans. Well, all of his dance troupe were people of, you know, Black people, right? So that was never, so he's done before. I don't think even Beyonce could have you know, done that.
Oh my goodness. No, it's crazy because like, if you really dive deep and dissect the symbolism behind his performance, it was the PlayStation controller. I don't know if a lot of people caught that. And what that pretty much symbolized is you have to play the game. You know what I'm saying? As in the corporate world, you have to put on almost like a corporate gaze to make sure that, you know, you tone yourself down to fit within the quote unquote societal norm as to where you and how you should conduct yourself. So that was on there. You know, Samuel Jackson is the black Uncle Sam, you know, basically telling him you're too ghetto, tone it down. Whatever. He went to the slow songs, and obviously the They Not Like Us, he kept teasing throughout the track. And then, you know, with the, you know, the colors coming together, the red, white, and blue symbolizing, you know, the unity and the divide of the United States. It was just brilliant. Would you actually go back and dissect every part of it? Very, 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 very powerful performance, in my opinion.
It absolutely was. And I'm glad you brought up Samuel Jackson as Uncle Sam.
Yeah.
Some people were talking about how it reminded them not just of Uncle Sam being the American, you know, version of Uncle Sam, because Uncle Sam, when we see that version, he's usually a white man, but it made people think about the Uncle Tom too, because he started becoming an Uncle Tom that was, you know, treating black people a certain way, telling, you know, saying things that, back in the, well, not even just back in the day, because it's now with a lot of people that brought out tweeting in other social media outlays, many people who started to discuss, and I think in a slight code, how displeased they were that rap artists got this main stage, and that it, you know. And of course, there was other people that could have been chosen, but why him? And some people made it very political, saying, you know, it was because of Trump. But then they had to say, well, he was chosen way before Trump got elected. So so people would, you know, wanted their own truth to be realized for this. I did want to make a mention, too, that the Uncle Tom, some people are thinking, and I just want to bring this out because it came to my attention, that people are looking at Uncle Tom as a person that was actual real live person. And there's a story, and I won't say I know for sure that that's not what, how we got the uncle word uncle or the fixture on our, in our minds of an Uncle Tom, but there was an Uncle Tom's Cabin that was written by Harriet Beecher Stowe. And that's where I believe the term originated for Uncle Tom. So if there's, again, I don't know if there was a real live Uncle Tom that people are floating around, but I'm familiar with the novel by Harriet Beecher Stowe, Uncle Tom's Cabin. And for me and many historians, that's where the term Uncle Tom pretty much came from, her story, which, by the way, was a story that captured abolitionists and kind of started or propelled the abolitionist movement, which was to, of course, end slavery in the United States. And speaking of that, I'll go back to talking about Harriet Tubman really quickly, because she was an abolitionist, but she was also a person, an activist. Was an activist to have Black women get the right to vote. So I sometimes people don't mention her in that vein with other women, and so I wanted to make sure we noted that about her. And I think I said she freed about 70 slaves. That was on one-on-one that she went back, so I think 14 or so times back into the South to free family members and people who, you know, were just hanging around. So the phrase or the saying that people usually say that comes from her that didn't was, I could have freed 1,000 slaves, and I could have freed a lot more had they known they were slaves. That's a great saying. I actually have shared that saying to other people, saying it came from her. But I did a little research, and through the archives That's one of the sayings that never comes up. So they were saying that that was manufactured. How maybe that's a great statement and maybe that was even true, but that's not really something she had said. But I'm going to be one of those people who will still use it. I just won't then say it comes from her, because I think that's a mindset, right? We have a mindset that we tend not to know our place in history so much. And so we just do what comes naturally or what we think is the norm. And so another term that I see that people are saying right now, especially those who are opposed to DEI, you mentioned DEI in the conversation, diversity, equity, inclusivity, is that they're a product, you know, we didn't own slaves. Why should we white people right now feel like we need to, you know, go above and beyond to be held accountable for, you know, our ancestors? And, you know, being a product of our times means, you know, that was what was the norm of our times. And I would think that you can't really say you were a product of your times during slavery, because people know what's right and wrong all the time. Right. There were abolitionists during that time. Right. There was a movement during that time, way before Harriet Beecher Stowe's Uncle Tom's Cabin. So to say right now we're a product of our times, you know, because we need economic relief or whatever the reason is, we can disregard other people and, you know, not bring them equity, just doesn't make any sense to me. And so taking away the end racism signage that was there for over 4 years at Super Bowls was very much a sign of a political stress on the teams, or I should say political stress on the league. But we're getting into the next segment, and I said we're going to mention. The lyric. I found that. So you said a big fan of his. So I think you tell me if what this means to you. Okay, here it is. We all woke up trying to tune to the daily news, looking for confirmation, hope an election wasn't true. A reminder that our lived reality shaped the art we create. His work stands as a testament to the power of Black storytelling in all its forms. That's kind of like what you said too. So that's a political statement there for him. Like you said, he's creative and he's ingenious in how he throws shade at people. I guess is the best way of saying it. Do you have a favorite line from or lyric from Kendrick Lamar, or is that one of those things that you can feel?
Yeah, I can feel it. You know, with me, when it comes to Kendrick Lamar, I mean, he has so many lines that are just, you know, the average person, if you're not a deep thinker, like, I guess it's the Virgo in me that I'm a very deep thinker. I'm over analytical about a lot of things. So a lot of the time when I listen to a Kendrick Lamar album, I have to go back and listen to it a few times. And sometimes I'll go to my Spotify and I'll follow along with the lyrics, because it's like, okay, I don't want to miss anything, because it's like, he's the definition of somebody who's a real artist, and he really, really showcases art. Artistry. You know, I saw him live, one of the best performances I've ever seen, and he really demonstrates artistry to the highest form. So, you know, a lot of the time when it comes to dissecting his lyrics, it's like you really have to dive deep into it, give it deep thought to really get a clear understanding of what it is that he's trying to say and whatnot. So that's something I will say about Kendrick in that sense. It's like, and then when you refer to that line, like, you know, what I would say is it's pretty much in a nutshell saying that, like, you know, the direction that the country is going to go, he's not really in favor of it, because whatever was promised, whether it's from, you know, you're looking at the conservative side, you're looking at the more liberal side, it's literally the agenda is going to remain the same, essentially. That's what I got from that.
Oh, yeah. And I actually didn't finish. I think I cut it. I said what was said about as opposed to the last lyrics, but I'll just read that really quickly. All of us worried, all of us buried, and our feelings deep. None of us married to his proposal, making us feel cheap, stealing sad, distraught, and mad. Tell the neighbor about it. I love that. Tell the neighbor about it. Because, yeah, we it takes a village. And it takes I like those other songs, that it takes a nation of millions to hold us back. So we have to do things together. Okay, so we talked about some firsts. We talked about some, there's another one. Did you know? This is very interesting because I think there's only a handful of them left. Lieutenant Colonel Harry Stewart Jr. was a Tuskegee Airman, and he died earlier. I don't know if it was this month, but definitely within 2024 at the age of 100. So those are some good genes. But Tuskegee Airmen, they were also first because they came around, and we're looking at DEI, they were all DEI hires. Because they had white pilots, but someone came out and said, you know, I wonder if black pilots can, you know, if black people can be pilots. So they were like, okay, well, let's get them together. But of course, there weren't just, you know, lots of black men hanging around trying to be pilots. So for the Tuskegee Airmen to not just have done their job, but to do their job in such a brilliant way, that they're recognized more than 80 years out, and probably, you know, if, you know, we continue with recognizing people for their endeavors, more than 1,000 years out, we hope. But yeah, I just wanted to make a mention of that. And you would think, God, she loves Harriet Tubman, because I forgot to mention that she was given the Brigadier General honor. So I'm going to call her General Tubman for the rest of this night, and forever maybe, because that's just giving her honor. And she deserved it, but they certainly didn't give her any money. And she was supposed to have her name, I mean, her likeness on the $20 bill. President Obama had set that up, and all they were waiting for was the funds, because it cost a lot of money to change hands. And so that was something that they were going to do. And I also want, and then they didn't. Trump got into office and redid everything that Obama, or tried to get rid of everything. He didn't get rid of Obamacare, but tried to get rid of everything. And that was one of the things they just called stalled, in quotes. They just stalled it. Well, it's still very much stalled. And along with that, I'm hearing that, or I guess I saw it on one of the gov.gov sites, so it's not something that's not true, that they're looking to discontinue the pennies in the United States. And that was one of those things where you want to get rid of waste. Well, you know, who needs a penny, and pennies cost money? And that's all true. But I'm thinking, who's on the penny? Do you know who's on the penny, Kenny?
On the American penny?
Yeah.
I'm just trying to think. Let me just think back.
Former president. Civil War.
I'm going to say Abraham Lincoln.
Abraham Lincoln, yes. So to me, he's the only person that represents, you know, a positive outcome for African-American. So I want to make that mention. So if you want to have some kind of semblance or something, let's fight to get, I mean, I would love to have an African-American woman on some kind of coin or material, like a dollar. I mean, like the $20 bill. I don't care how much it costs. I don't think people care about the cost when it's their communities, you know, and this act, she would actually represent all of our communities. And I just shared why, which is why I rambled on about her, because she's that phenomenal. All right, okay. So we are... Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, we actually have a black woman on a $10 bill in Canada, Viola Desmond, actually. She's actually from Nova Scotia. she was going to theaters back in the 40s, and they were basically telling her, you know, blacks have to sit in the back of the theater, you can't sit in the front. So she took a strong stance on that. And Viola Desmond has been on the $10 bill in Canada for the last, I believe it was 4 or 5 years ago, I believe it was. And she's been on the $10 bill since then. So we have made that change in Canada.
I'm not feeling you. Oh, Canada. I think we were joking last time that we're going to move to Canada because of, you know, certain certain people, the leader of the free world. But now there's even more reason for Black people to up and go. I don't know. But we're coming to an end. And I want to say we're going to end the show with a musical interlude. The song is "The Revolution Will Not Be Televised." For me, when I hear that phrase, I'm thinking Public Enemy. I'm thinking, Malcolm X. I never thought Gil Scott-Heron, who's the person who actually sings it. And there was a song in the 1960s. So I want you to share with us, take this one last minute to share with our listeners and future possible clients of yours and customers of yours who wants the organic mindset agency to help their businesses into the stratosphere with their brand for marketing purposes. Kenny Perry, thank you for being on my show. I am blessed to have had you. Please share with my audience anything you'd like them to know and how to connect with you.
Absolutely. The best way to connect with me, you can reach out to me. First of all, get my phone number, 302-204-0226. I'll repeat, 302-204-0226. And my other number is 647-503-8757, 647-503-8757. And also via email, you can connect with me directly at kenny@organic-mindset.com. And I'll repeat one more time, kenny@organic-mindset.com. And Instagram's another way to get in touch with me at organic mindset agency, all one word.
Okay, Kenny, you know what? I think I've been spoofed because like I said, this show today is actually being taped, and the beep that I got, I thought was my end of show beep, but it was my roundtable beep. So okay. What we're going to do, the good news is we have that already there. So people, if you wanted those numbers, but you didn't have a pen ready, handy, know that this show will be archived so you can listen to it again later via the internet on WGXC, www.wayfarm.org, or you can just listen because in about 10 minutes, he'll say this all over again to you. Because there are a few things we could still talk about. The interesting thing that I wanted to also mention was the Race Talk Show is a spinoff from this on-air broadcast, and it will be available to be streamed via YouTube, the ICC channel, which is 6 different episodes, very small clipped episodes put together to make 3 different episodes called the Race Talk Show. So it's an introduction like right now where we introduce a guest and they talk about their life and how their ethnicity kind of showcases who they are and how they've dealt with some issues that might have arisen from their being a person of color. And we also have people who are not of color who share with you because they're around people of color, that they understand now that racist feedback, something that you can't really know unless you're you're walking that walk or in those shoes. So it's how do you be a good ally to people who are experiencing behaviors from others that just aren't right. And that, like you said, Kenny, won't go anywhere. Racism is not going anywhere. But again, the reason for this show is that if you talk about it, then it doesn't have to fester in your soul like anything else. If you're going through something, to get it out, to be able to talk about it, then you can understand how to talk about it to others and then get information and be able to inform others. And then, of course, after informing, it's what do you do? So kind of like with Kendrick Lamar, what he does is through his music, through his artistry, he lets you know how he feels. He gives people a way to just by listening to digest what's happening in the world and to have a certain feeling about it that may not fester inside the soul, because you can like dance to the beat or something. You can be engaged in it in a different way than, you know, ho hum and worries me. So are there any good suggestions that you would have for people to overcome certain incidents that they have to deal with?
Sorry, I didn't quite understand the question.
Via the ethnic, you know, you said racism will never end. Mm-hmm. I would imagine that you have experienced some racist behaviors that was propelled at you, that you were forced to endure. Any good ways of saying, you know, how might someone engage or not engage with that and make that become something that doesn't hurt them or hinder their creativity or their genius?
I would say just don't take it personal at the end of the day, right? I mean, it's someone's ignorance, you know, at the end of the day, because, you know, they expect us to act in a certain way. And I'm glad that you're starting to see a lot more brothers and sisters now when they get into situations like that. They just pull their phone out and record now because they expect us to respond in a violent manner, right? So at the end of the day, you know, being able to just take the moral high road and, you know, respond with class and gratitude instead of, you know, obviously responding back in an aggressive manner, I believe it elevates you more than anything else.
Okay. Would you mind sharing one of the experiences you might have had that you go, maybe that's something you could do today because of cell phones, but that wasn't anything we could do in the past, right?
Yeah, I'm trying to think something that, you know, whether it's, you know, being in university and, you know, and you know, having some, because, you know, being an athlete and whatnot, and then I would always make it a point to sit in the front of the class. Like, no matter what, you know, school I went to, I always sat in the front of the class. It was something that I wanted to, you know, pretty much adapt to. And I remember having a guidance counselor back when I was in middle school, and I had a period of my life where I was kind of a class clown. I always had really good grades, but I was someone that, like, you know, I would be a little bit of a class clown sometimes, and she didn't think that, one, I would get through high school, and two, I would actually become, you know, finish university and, you know, obviously get into the world. She just didn't think very much of me because of, you know, how I used to, you know, kind of, you know, laugh and joke and make jokes and stuff like that all the time. So, you know, I mean, Lord knows if she's even still on earth, but, you know, that's just something I look back at now is...
And that motivated me. Or what was her ethnicity?
She was a white guy. She was a white guidance counselor. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So she didn't think very much of me. So it was one of those situations. And, you know, I always took pride on really valuing myself when it came to academics because I was an athlete and, you know, I was a pretty decent athlete. So I really always wanted to focus on, you know, making sure that, you know, I carried myself in a way where I always, you know, strive to sit in front of the class and get good grades. So it was something that was really important to me. And even back then when I used to have braids and I used to dress a certain way and, you know, wearing do-rags and stuff, you know, obviously, you know, people are going to look at us a certain way, but when it came to presentations, when it came to, you know, public speaking, I always made sure I go above and beyond to excel.
Okay. And that's exactly why I think DEI doesn't make any sense when you're saying if you're a DEI hire, that means you're the best hire. You know? I mean, because like you said, if you're going to be an African American and you're going to get hired, you're not going to be you're going to be the cream of the crop because you're going to.
Yeah, 100%.
Right. There's so many stories that I have connected with you like that with the guidance counselor, but we are now at that time. So it wasn't about me. I'll make it be about me one day. So my listeners, if you're interested, you know, find a way, converse with me via Facebook, via LinkedIn. I'm on Instagram. Let me know that way. Yeah, Kim, I want that story about you and your guidance counselor, because there is one in high school. But that's how you connect with me. You're also going to connect with Kenny through the numbers he's getting ready to share with you. But also know that all his information will be able to be found on the website www.kimberlyirwin.me, me.me. All right, Kenny, now we're ending the show. You let them know again how to get in touch with you.
So the best place to get in touch with me is, you know, you get first thing, you call me or text me, WhatsApp, call, whatever it may be, 302-204-0226. I repeat, 302-204-0226. Other number you can reach me on is 647-503-8757.
Can you give that number one
time? Yeah, 647-503-8757. And the best way to get in contact with us through email is you can either send to our pretty much general inbox, which is info@organic-mindset.co. And it's info@organic-mindset.co. Or you could reach me directly at kenny@organic-mindset.com. Kenny@organic-mindset.com. And then Instagram, you can reach us on Instagram too, and that is @organic-mindset-agency, all one word, @organic-mindset-agency.
Well, thank you so much, Kenny, again. And I want to thank my listeners for listening. And don't hang up, because we are getting ready to give you Revolution Will Not Be Televised. I'm going to end with peace out and love, beauty, joy. Here we have Gil Scott-Heron.
You will not be able to plug in, turn on, and cop out. You will not be able to lose yourself on Skag and skip out for beer during commercials, because the revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by celebrities and four parts without commercial interruption. The revolution will not show you pictures of Nixon blowing a bugle and leading a charge by John Mitchell, General Abrams, and Spiral Agnew. Hog maws confiscated from the Harlem sanctuary. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by the streets of a war theater and will not star Natalie Woods and Steve McQueen or Bullwinkle and Julia. The revolution will not keep your mouth sex appeal. The revolution will not get rid of the dove. Because the revolution will not be televised, brother. There will be no pictures of you and Willie Mae pushing that shopping cart down the block on the day run, or trying to fly that color TV into a stolen ambulance. NBC will not be able to predict the winner at 8:32 on the court from 29. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay.